remember like a year and a half, 2 years ago, Scott went through a transformative thing because Scott was a no breakfast guy and you became a breakfast guy. Isn't that right? I think a notable transition for you when you switched to become a breakfast boy.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And it's just easy to get into these habits out of convenience or because you're hurried. And then when you make a change like that, it's like, oh yeah, this is how it's supposed to be.
And you're making like real breakfast, right, Scott? Like eggs, bacon type stuff?
Yes.
And Jess, you just rip through a protein shake, right?
Yeah, I have my protein every morning because it's like, it keeps me full for like until lunch. And then it's get my protein in for the day because I have such a struggle of getting in so much protein. Because like low-key, I don't look like I weigh 180 pounds, but I weigh 180 pounds. And that means I have to take 180 grams of protein like every single day to keep up muscle production. And that's a lot.
That's how it works. That's how you map that. So the number of grams of protein.
It's like a formula. It's like a formula. So like if you're trying to build more muscle, you obviously want to up the intake. It's like 1.1 grams per body pound, something like that. And so that's usually what I've been like doing is like 170 to 180 grams a day. And that's hard. It's like really hard because I also don't like, it's not that I don't want to eat, but it's also like, I don't eat that much. Like I would have to continuously be feeding myself like high protein things to hit that every day. And that's hard. I'm not that hungry.
Wow. This is interesting because this is where compared to you guys, I'm like truly pathetic. I act like my life is together, but the last week for breakfast each day, I've had Scooby Snack graham crackers dipped in peanut butter. That's been what which isn't fuel. About 35 minutes later, I'm extremely hungry. And then what do? On the way to school, I stop at the coffee shop and I buy a chocolate chip cookie and have a coffee with that. So you're doing way better than me. I probably need to get my life together and get some better teacher fuel in the morning because I struggle on account of literally only ingesting carbohydrates and peanut butter for every breakfast.
I muted myself to sneeze.
Oh, nice. That's okay. I can add a sneeze out.
Good agility. Well, good morning, everybody. And welcome to the latest Teach4X podcast episode here at the Teach4X Network. For all of you newcomers out there, Teach4X is an on-demand educator development service focused on the four pillars of education, which are technology, curriculum, community, and leadership. We are three high school social studies educators in a large urban public school with over 25 years of combined instructional experience. With us, as always, is Eric Johnson. He makes us sound better than we actually are each and every episode. Eric, how are you today?
I'm awesome, Scott. I grocery shopped. I survived. I continue to feel the crippling effects of inflation. I bought four Lunchables and one jug of yogurt, and it was $100 somehow. So that's where I'm at. But I achieved my grocery shopping. That's the biggest hump of the day, and I'm ready to rock. I'm doing teacher stuff all day. We got the podcast. I'm making a lesson for my grad students, doing some teacher networking type stuff. So I'm all in. This is a Sunday of education for me. What about you, Scott? How are you doing, man?
Wow, excited. I'm doing terrific. I am not as educator focused today. So I am going to have our new family baby pictures done today. So that's going to happen this afternoon. So that's going to be fun. Then there's some big football games going on. And then aside from that, I'm not really sure because, as you know, I am not going to be in the classroom here for 2 weeks. I am taking my parental leave. So there is no instructional prep for me tonight, which is great.
Wow. I am so jealous. That might be worth having a kid just for that.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Sunday blues is what I call it. You know, the Sunday pressure, the Sunday night, like, oh my God, what am I going to do with these people for the next 5 days? That's a tough one. So yeah, having a child isn't bad, but I'm going to, the other thing I'm going to do today, which I didn't mention, is clean poopy diapers. So, you know, that's the balance there.
What's new about you, Jess? You got anything exciting going on over there?
No, I think like I was super hyped for the weekend because I had like cool, fun young person plans. And now I'm like, okay, well now it's a time to reel back all the craziness that is my life and stabilize myself once more. So I need to like go to the gym. I got to go grocery shopping. I cleaned my apartment. So like, I'm like, okay, like things are back to normal after fun young people plans. But yeah, nothing crazy.
So today we are talking about what makes our assignments and our lessons meaningful. And this is a meaningful topic for all of us teachers and instructors out there. But this is something that definitely an educator deals with from time to time. I remember specifically, I had reached a point in my career, I was a little frustrated one day. This is probably maybe my fifth or sixth year teaching. And I had a class that I was always particularly obsessed with how much different assignments were worth point-wise. You know, they were like always on me about it. How much is this worth? How much is this worth? And then, you know, if it wasn't enough, they would like try to bargain, you know, all that stuff. They were too smart for their own good. And I was just too impatient to deal with it. That's basically what it was. So one day my solution, they're like, Mr. F, how much is this assignment worth? And I was really not having it. So I told him, you know what? It's worth 1,000,000 points. And because I had just simply run out of things to say and do to make this task meaningful. So I had to tell them it was worth 1,000,000 points. So, and of course they looked at me like they didn't know that that was possible. I didn't know that was possible. Of course, even that has a shelf life. You can't make every assignment worth 1,000,000 points. So today we're talking about what it is you could do to make your assignments more meaningful to your students, which of course ups that engagement. So Johnson, you always seem to have some meaningful tasks going on, stuff that connects to real life. What do you do to make your assignments meaningful?
So something I've appreciated, a trend I've appreciated over the past few years is I think overall in the teacher community quite controversial. And it's this trend of shifting our education from being like fact and figure based to skills based. You know, this is something that is the bane of the old guard of social studies teachers, because more and more long gone are the days where kids are memorizing a bunch of dates. And more we're getting to the point where the kids are just reading about history and analyzing it and practicing their reading and writing skills. And this is a shift that I don't mind. I'd love a quick temperature check on how you guys feel about that transition from emphasizing like historical fact to emphasizing skills. I don't know. Fire, is that something that bothers you? Do you dig that? Is it a neither here nor there?
It doesn't bother me at all. I think it's more appropriate given that the understanding and memorization of facts is a very like pre-internet skill.
Yeah.
You know, like you used to have to know that stuff because if you didn't know it, how else could you know it? But now since we all have a supercomputer, everybody should theoretically know who the 16th president was. Like it's not that much of a stretch to know that. So yeah.
Jess, where do you land on that? I assume the same probably, right?
Yeah, I hated those rote memorization. Is that how I said rote?
Yeah.
Memorization. Yeah. In high school, when I was in high school, like if I had to memorize like a bunch of dates and stuff like that, that always seemed so silly to me, honestly. Well, honestly, I guess maybe I was just so ingrained with that, like that I just thought that that was normal. So then my social studies teacher, he was actually one of the first ones to be more group project skill-based kind of people. And like, that was before we had like ladders and stuff like that, but he was really more going against the grain kind of thing than the usual like memorize all of these dates kind of thing. So that like I hated it at first because it wasn't what I was used to. Like I was like, what is this? Like give me the dates and the multiple choice and do that. But honestly, I look back now as a teacher and I'm like, dang, that man knew what he was doing before everybody else knew what they were doing, because honestly, like it helped with so much. Like the skills that I learned from that class, like my social studies skills, were insane. And some of the projects that he would make us do are some of the ones that I remember the most.
Yeah, and so this is a trend that I really appreciate as well. You know, as a teacher, I'm most interested in working with the students. To me, the subject, yeah, I like history. I like it more than the students, but I'm not like a do or die history guy. I don't have a bunch of historical tomes that I'm sitting around reading. And so this year in particular, as we emphasize these skills and skill-based assignments, you know, I find myself in my civics class, we're doing a lot of like reading and writing activities based on the concept of media literacy. And I have really, really been appreciating and enjoying the way that we do skills, historical skills education at our school. We have a foot in the world of standards-based grading. We have adapted it to fit within the grading system that we use, as Scott and Jess, you guys well know. And I really enjoy having the skill to orbit around as sort of the center of the universe. I find, for example, right now we're doing evaluating sources, which teachers might be familiar with, the OPVL organizer, origin, purpose, value, limitations, and taking really relevant articles or media about media literacy and fake news and TikTok, reading those, going over those with the students, and then having the kids engage in evaluating these sources and practicing the skill. I just find it makes it easy as an educator to make my lessons and plans extremely intentional. And I find it a lot easier to plan, okay, like we're practicing this OPVL skill versus kind of even the olden days when I started teaching and we were still kind of in that like fact and figure memorizing dates world. We were like, okay, like what the hell am I working towards? And so now knowing like we're working towards practicing the skill, I love, and I was teaching, this maybe is a little weird, I was just teaching kids how to do evaluating sources, and I was having so much fun prepping them and giving them examples, just because it's like easy for me to conceptualize what we're working towards. I think it's easy for them, even if the skill is new, they're like, okay, like I'm working towards this one thing. I got to be able to do this one thing when I read this article. And we were all like on the same page and in sync, and that felt really cool. And then what I find too is at our school, we weight these skill grades so heavily, and there's all these opportunities for kids to redo and revise and recover their grades. But part of adapting to the extra paperwork of allowing that recovery is I've implemented, and I've talked about this a little bit before, but skills conferences, where when kids do work on skills, and I know, I think Jess, you've done a little bit of this as well, where after the kids do the work, I sit with them one-on-one and go over their assignment and give them feedback based off the rubric or ladder that we're grading them on. And I think kids find it a little weird at first, but it gets to a point where they know what they're shooting for. They know what I'm helping them with, and we're able to have really meaningful and productive conversations about their performance. And at the end of the day, in terms of thinking about like what makes an assignment meaningful, I found this ability to be intentional and to be super clear with students about where they're landing has been, you know, completely transformational. Because gone are the days where a kid's parent comes to conferences and like, hey, how's my kid? How come they have like a C or a B? And you're like, because I think they didn't do a couple things. But now you can say, yo, your kid just doesn't know how to find the main idea. And we're working on it right now. I've given them some tips for it. And so I've just found our new emphasis on skills to be so valuable for intentionality. I think the kids feel it. And I was like weirdly hyped. I don't know, for some reason, when I was teaching the kids evaluating sources skill, I was having more fun than I had teaching in a long time. So that's where I'm landing. And when I'm thinking about what makes assignments meaningful is emphasizing that skills-based and being super intentional about what the purpose of the assignment is.
Yeah, heck yeah. I also was very hyped when I was doing OPVL last week, dude. I was just like super, I think the ice cream scoop graphic organizer we have is like crazy.
Yeah, it's a good organizer.
I was like, this is so fun and cute. And so like, I like doing that because then I feel like I have, when I introduce a new skill, I kind of have like the lessons prepped, right? Because I know how to do the skill. So then like, it takes a lot of pressure off because I'm like, okay, well, I know how to do this. I know it's not like kids are going to randomly ask me a bunch of dates that I don't know, low-key, because it's like you said, like I'm not a big history person. Like I am, obviously, but like I'm not like so into history where I remember so many big details or like so many like other dates and stuff like that. So when we're doing skills stuff, it's so much easier for me to get them hyper focused on getting them to be able to do the skills, right? And then they actually are so proud of themselves. They like the little like, I got it, like I know what I'm doing. Like the moment when they're like, I knew that this was to persuade because this was what the author was doing, and then this is their value, this is like why it's so valuable, and then it's limited because he's biased. Like I remember bias, then we learned it, and I was like, dang, like good job. I was low-key not even thinking about that. And then they surprise you because then they hit you with like stuff that you didn't even think about when it comes to like the value and the limitation and stuff. And I'm like, dang, you got, yeah, did me, I didn't really think about that. And so they get really proud of themselves, which I think is fun. And since they can see the ladder and they're like, I did it, like I know that I did all the parts, you know, it's also very helpful for them to advocate for themselves. Because sometimes I be missing stuff when I'm like reading their stuff and they're like, no, the ladder says that I need to have this and I have it right here, Miss H. And they come and point it out to me and I'm like, oh, well, you're right. Let me give you the 4. And then they're like, okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's fun. And that student advocacy piece, I think, is really valuable. Fire, have you done OPVL yet this year? Have you monkeyed around with that one at all yet?
I have a little bit. Yeah, I have. I have a little bit. The ice cream scoop is fun. It's cute. And yeah, I kind of got my basic thing with the OPVL. Yeah.
I used to make the ice cream scoop in Spanish. I had to make like a boring chart.
Oh, yeah.
How do you say chocolate in Spanish?
Chocolate. So it's just the same thing, but you just say it with like a different accent.
Wow. Chocolate. I'm disappointed. I thought that was going to be something really chocolate. Wild or interesting.
Yeah.
Chocolate. Strawberry fresa. Vanilla vainilla.
That's all pretty easy. I feel like I think I just speak Spanish now.
Yeah, you probably do.
Well, if your instruction is a little vanilla, how about that one? You like that one? You like how
vainilla.
So if your instruction is a little vanilla, one thing that I like to do to try and add a little more meaning to it is to make some sort of a real world scenario or some sort of a simulation that allows the students to engage in whatever they're learning at a different level. So one thing that I've done, just some examples, U.S. history, you always got to do the presidential election and the electoral college. So instead of just doing, kind of like you said, Johnson, instead of having the memorization of the different details, you know, the different numbers and electoral votes and all that, I get into the habit of giving the students all that up front. So instead of them just writing in their notebooks all these details, I give them whatever it is I need them to know. In this case, all these different numbers and these different electoral states or different votes for different states, I give it to them. We go over it and then we do like a simulation. So we go like week by week leading up to the election, and different states become red states and blue states. And then they have to add up the electoral votes. And then if they had money to spend, if they wanted to tilt one state to red or blue, which one would they pick and what would they do? And so it just engages a whole different level of this topic that otherwise might be pretty boring or pretty complicated. So that's one thing that I love to do. And then I get, you know, the chance, like both of you said, to just, or I'm then just circling around, kind of interacting with the kids and, you know, seeing what they think and working with them. So that's very valuable. And that's something that I really enjoy. Another one I used to do back in my psychology days was when we would be learning about like how the eye works and the ears work. I found an article where different police departments were testing like the audio, the sirens, the noise the siren makes, and then the actual lights, like which ones are most noticeable or which ones get people's attention more. So I found that and had the kids read it. And then they had to come up with like an evidence-based recommendation as to what the siren should be, you know, what pitch it should be or what color the flash should be. So just little things like that where, you know, instead of having the kids just kind of regurgitate what they learned, at least they get to apply it in a cool way. And then you could have them, you know, make a presentation or work in groups, or, you know, there's kind of all these different options coming out of that. So sometimes it's tough to be creative and like come up with scenarios, but you know, you just got to remember that they're kids, and you know, if you ham it up and it's not perfect, sometimes it doesn't really matter. So, you know, they believed in Santa Claus a couple of years ago, like whatever.
Yeah. What kind of preloading do you do to keep kids on track during maybe something more immersive, like say the election thing? I assume that's a multi-day thing. So besides giving yes. information, how do you like set the stage? And then how do you assess or grade that? So it kind of all comes, like what's the start and what's the end that sort of pieces it together with, you know, both pieces of the bread of the sandwich, with the meat being the simulation, you know, what's the bottom and top of that look like?
So the intro is just the straight electoral map and the numbers and the votes. Then they have a graphic organizer that takes them week by week leading up to the election. I assign them either they're a Republican or a Democrat, just by like a random, we just do it randomly. So they're either kind of keeping track of blue states or red states. And then week by week, I have slides that are kind of, I pre-made that lead up to the election. So it'll say week of October 5th, North and South Carolina have been called for the Democrats. They're blue states. So then the kids got to mark off on their chart, oh, those are blue states. And now the new electoral votes are, you know, this many to this many. And so them keeping up on that. And then they have a written response at the end, an evidence-based response. So I stop it like a week before I asked the students how many uncalled states are there left. Those are like the swing states. So then that's, you know, always the states, Florida, Michigan, or Ohio and stuff like that. And then, okay, if you had resources to, you know, invest in one state, which one would you pick and why? So then that is kind of like the evidence-based response. They should say one of the swing states. If they say, you know, I don't get it. Or if they say, I'm going to spend money in Nevada when that's already been called, well, then you're not. You know, they didn't get it, right? They didn't quite understand it. So that's kind of how I do it. And then I just save the slides. The slides are always there. It's an easy thing. It takes 2 days. I add a little math component where they got to keep track of money and the votes. And so that's that.
I'll pay you like $50 to make something like this for the Chicago mayoral election.
Oh, okay. That could be interesting.
Yeah, because all you have to do is like the neighborhoods.
Yeah, you could do the neighborhoods, and then you just got to integrate something with the runoff, because that's kind of like a unique Chicago thing. If there's two candidates, then they do the election again.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really awesome, Fire. That's really cool. And I will pay you $50 to make a mayoral activity, because otherwise my kids are just going to be watching the mayor debates and taking notes, which is nowhere near as engaging.
No, they don't want to. And that's where I guess there's different approaches to what it is that I actually want them to learn about. This is just me. Maybe that's not, this is right or wrong. I'm kind of tilted. I specifically wanted to tilt away from having the kids understand like issues and what candidates think about issues. Like I didn't really want them to know, like that wasn't my goal. My goal was for them to understand the election process, like how does this happen? And then why is it when you watch the presidential election, they've got this big map with red and blue on it? Like, what the heck is that? You know, the kids don't know what that means. They don't know. They don't get it. Why does it come down to Ohio? Like, they don't understand. They don't get it. So simply telling them that could communicate some importance. But if I create a scenario where they're like actually doing it, now they know, oh yeah, those are, so yeah, it comes down to Florida, that's swing state, well, because of the red and the blue, because I did that thing in Mr. F's class. Like, that's all I need them to know.
Well, that's really cool. You know, and I kind of think a lot of the things we're bringing to the table today, you know, Fire talking about these really immersive like simulations, and you know, I'm talking about like the skills and the intentionality of grading, you know, those two things can be combined, right? And you can wrap like an activity like you did, Fire, say, with readings that put it all together where the kids are engaging in some of these rubric-based skill things. And I'm guessing, Jess, you've got the olive on the martini, or the chocolate on the sundae here, with something else that you could fold into what we've been discussing that would make, you know, the ultimate Voltron of meaningful assignments and create something really cool.
Yeah, so I've been doing like my little lessons, you know, these past couple weeks. I've been kind of a little reflective of how they've been going, and what I honestly, I feel like when I'm reflecting, I feel like I go based off emotion. So if something makes me really happy, it's very like, oh, like, yay, like you guys did this. Like, I feel like now I have to do more of that. So basically I planned like this class discussion with my freshmen. And if you have ever had freshmen, you know that they don't want to do class discussion. They don't want to talk to each other. They don't want to get up in front of the class or say stuff or be perceived at all. So I honestly do a lot more discussion when I have seniors or juniors in civics. And this was like kind of one of the first times that I did class discussion with my freshmen. And so I have a ladder that goes with it, a discussion ladder, but the discussion ladder was more for the juniors. And I was like, maybe I need to adapt this ladder to be more standard based for the freshmen, because the freshmen did really well to what I was expecting from them. But according to the ladder, they weren't reaching the standards. But then I was like, well, this is a junior based ladder, so maybe I should change it to the freshman based one. But after the discussion, I realized how well it went. I was like, oh my God, like they are talking to each other. They're bringing these ideas up and they're reflecting off what each other are saying. And so honestly, I had my ninth period, which is my most talkative period. So I totally suspected that they were going to talk a lot during this discussion, but then they absolutely killed it. Like, to the point where I'm like, all right, you guys deserve some pizza on Monday, whatever. You guys did so good, because we were talking about race and power. And because we were bringing these ideas up, they, you know, it can get sensitive, right? But they they handled it so maturely, so well. They reflected on each other's ideas. I mean, I think the quote of the day was this kid who, very opinionated kid, very like confrontational kid, disagreed with what one of his classmates said. And I was like, oh no, honey, this is not about to end well, right? I'm about to have to put something into the discipline form, whatever. And I reminded them, like, when he grabbed the talking piece, I'm like, don't forget, we're disagreeing with ideas, not with people. And he goes ahead, he goes, you know what? And he tosses it to someone else who had their hand raised. It's like, it's better left that I don't say anything. And I was like, okay.
Wow, that's cool.
And that's a skill. Like, that's, it takes like skill to be able to read the room, to be able to socialize with your classmates. And if you disagree with someone, not confronting them, not being abrasive about it, that's a big skill that kind of just left me so giddy. I was like, oh my god, like, you as a 14-15 year old who confronts me about everything, this man is up in my face confronting me about stuff, for you to have that self-discipline in this class discussion and that skill to, like, you know what, it's best that I don't say what I actually want to say and move on, that is big. And that kind of like showed me how much socialization matters. Like, these kids are so ingrained with their phones, they're so ingrained after the pandemic of not speaking to each other, of not interacting with each other, that they don't know how to speak and interact with each other. And so I think that that's something for me that's been like, I need to add more discussion, more partner stuff to my like lessons, because that is meaningful. That is like what I perceive as meaningful right now, like looking at what my students need and trying to then create stuff or do stuff based on that. And right now their need is interaction. They don't know how to interact with each other to save their lives. So I also have a ladder, so it's also skill-based. So best of both worlds, you know? So that's it. Yeah.
That's really nice. But more importantly, when is the pizza going to be there? Monday?
Yeah.
Monday, ninth period.
Monday, ninth period. I will be there. Save me a slice, please.
Nice.
End of the day. Bring our mutual student who you yelled at.
yeah. If he comes to class, I'll bring him by. We'll pick up a slice. But that's really meaningful. I've noticed that's sort of the theme in the last two podcasts, Jess. You've been talking about getting the students to connect more, which I think they need, and they need that help and a supportive teacher to put them in that position. So that's very cool.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, this is so nice. I was like so giddy at the end. I was like, oh, like, you guys talked. You guys put aside your fears and like spoke in front of the whole class. How cute.
And then I'm thinking, Fire, like, if we're going to put this all together, say we have first year teachers or a new teacher listening, or a teacher trying to like sort of reinvent their practice, or maybe abandon, we're all guilty of occasional busy work assignments. You know, how do we put this all together? Like, what's the theme? What are we as Teach4X, you know, what are we going to suggest to people? What should people take away, teachers take away from this podcast as they go to reflect on their own practice?
Well, what I'm hearing is find opportunities to get kids socializing with each other. So that's definitely a big thing that Miss H is taking away or is focusing on. Me, find opportunities to create a scenario or create a simulation of what you're doing, whether it be an election or, I mean, anything. It could be anything. It could be a legal case. It could be a criminal case. You know, everybody loves cold cases nowadays. Or, you know, it could be whether or not a certain law is going to be passed or something like that. Like, just all that stuff. It takes a lot of front end work, but it's incredibly beneficial. And, you know, once it's done, it's done. You have it forever. So those are things that could definitely be integrated. What else, Johnson? What could be the, what's the third prong of the stool here?
I guess I'm thinking, you know, make sure everything you do is intentional and has a purpose and an end goal in mind. Like, thinking, what are you actually assessing? Like, what is actually the point of this assignment? Is it to put a piece of paper in front of kids and stare at them because you're depressed? Or is it to, you know, build their skill in finding the main idea? Or is it to build their skill in interacting? Or is it to teach them about the elect process through like engaging in it? You know, I think that intentionality, this was part of my like teacher pitch for myself when I was in teacher school, because everybody has their like elevator pitch about themselves. And mine was always, I'm going to make sure every step of the way in my classroom has a purpose behind it. And I'm not always holding myself to that, but I try, right? And I think that's the final prong is like, as you construct everything you're constructing, think about like, what am I achieving with this? What is the purpose of this?
Yeah, absolutely. And the focus as well, the intent of what you're doing. You know, Miss H, her intent, your intent was to get them socializing and discussing. It's not necessarily that everybody's going to memorize these 10 terms and be able to use it in a set. Like that's, you know, that's not the focus. You know, you didn't stay up all night planning the meeting, you know, planning that lesson for them to do that. It's about them interacting. So like, that's the objective. That's the thing. And then the more that we focus, the higher the impact is. If, you know, we try to do everything, then the kids are trying to do everything and it kind of stinks. So, you know, really focusing on what you want the kids to do. I think that that's incredibly powerful as well.
Indeed.
I feel yeah. energized. That sounds great.
I feel like I'm going to go plan another discussion and the kids are going to hate me.
Well, I mean, that if you can't, that's the point of your existence right now, right? Just to plan discussions so the kids hate you.
That's... Yeah, like honestly, but that's cool because now that I'm like a four-year teacher, I no longer care if the kids hate me.
Well, you start to realize that that's how they're going to remember you. They're always going to remember Miss H. They might
it's going to be very hard for those kids to forget me.
Right. Right.
They'd be like, remember that crazy Mexican lady who would always like throw a ruler around and scream at us? And then she made us talk to each other and she would just sit there silently observing everyone. Because during my discussions, I don't talk. I tell them that from the beginning. I'm not going to say a single word for the rest of the period. It's up to y'all. If it's awkward silence, it's awkward silence.
Is that difficult for you? I feel like that takes a lot of self-discipline on your behalf not to talk.
A little bit, but you know, it's for the benefit of the children.
That's right. Right. It's all about the kids.
It benefits the kids when I don't talk.
I think we have some colleagues in the department, Jess, that would say it benefits the department if you don't talk.
Yeah, honestly. Oh, my God. But, you know, they like to act like I'm a menace to the department. But then when I'm not there, they're like, why is it so quiet?
Where
is
that's she? True. Well, much like class, when you don't talk, it's just awkward silence. And, you know, that's kind of the same atmosphere.
Yeah, the kids hate it. They're like, I think that was one of my discipline methods when I, like, this beginning year, I literally just didn't talk to them for two class periods. I sat there and I'm like, do your worksheet. Anyone who talks is going to the dean. And they hated it. They're like, I hate this. Because then I asked them, like, who likes it when Mace H doesn't talk to them? And then none of them were like, I don't like this. Blah, blah. So after that, they were much more relaxed. I'm like, that's right. Cherish my presence.
Yep.
Wow. You know, I feel like each week when I put clips of the podcast on YouTube, there's always going to be one clip of Jessica being frightening towards her students now. I think that might be part of your identity as an educator, Jess. I think that's good. I'm not sure.
And that's what I told the students too. I'm like, see, this is my toxic trait. I think I could, you know, get away with fighting everyone. And they're like, LOL. Like, they think it's funny. So like the little persona I put on. But then I think they also like know. I think they, you know how we describe our colleague as an M&M, tough outer shell, but very soft on the inside. I think they all kind of know that it's just kind of like a little act and that I'm very soft when it comes to them.
Just like your work dad.
Just like my work dad. That's why that's why he's my dad. You know, we share the same personality.
Yep.
Cool. We're probably all done, right. Jess. You want to bring it home?
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you would like to get in touch or ask us a question, you can do so via Spotify or shoot us an email at teach4xcontact@gmail.com. You can also find us everywhere on the web and support us on Patreon by visiting www.teach4x.com. Yay!
All right, everybody. Well, you have yourself a terrific January. Hope things are wrapping up for you this month very well, and we will see you very soon here on the Teach4X network. Have yourself a great week.
Doodles.